For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. Okay, it is March 19th. We are in Parashas Metzora, at the end of Parashas Metzora, page 630. And we're up to Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. We started discussing the Tuma of Zav
verse 13.
In the past couple of weeks. And now we'll continue with that discussion. So just to review, the Zav is a man who has had a discharge, a type of discharge which is not so common today, perhaps not existent at all today. And this discharge, if he sees one discharge, then he is tamei only for one day. If he sees twice, then he is tamei for 7 days, which is what we're going to discuss right now. And if he sees three times, then he is tamei for 7 days and is required to bring a karban when he becomes tahar, when he becomes pure. The discharges have to take place on three consecutive days or less, meaning that if he sees three times in one day, then he becomes a complete Zav. If he sees once on the first day, once on the second day, once on the third day, then he also becomes a complete Zav. But if it's spread out over 4 or 5 days, then it would not make him into a full-fledged Zav. It has to be three times in 3 days or less. There is a difference of opinion. What happens if he sees two times on the first day, and then skips a day and sees one on the third day? We paskin, according to Beis Hillel, that he would not be a complete Zav. There's a discussion about that case. But for simplicity's sake, we won't get into that type of case. He needs to see three times in a maximum of 3 days. 3 days or less, he would have to see three discharges, which would make him into a complete Zav. So when a person becomes a Zav, in order to become Tohar, they need to count 7 clean days of Ziva. 7 clean days. They have to go 7 days without having any discharge of that nature. So it says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, V'chi yitar ha-zav mi-zovo, when the Zav will become pure from his Zav, from his flow, his discharge. V'safra lo shivas yamim l'toharaso. He will count 7 days, means 7 clean days, for his purity. V'chibes begadav, and then he will wash his clothing, which means he'll put his clothing in the mikvah. V'rachatz besaro b'mayim chayim v'toher, and he will wash his flesh in, which means he'll immerse, in mayim chayim, which literally means live water, translated here as
Spring water,
okay.
Vitoher,
and he'll become pure. Yes, it is the mikvah, but it is a, as we've mentioned before, the mikvah that we have is not spring water and would not be sufficient to make a Zav Tahar. The mikvah that we have is sufficient for the purposes that we use it for, but it is insufficient to make a Zav Tahar. A Zav can only become Tahar with spring water. Spring water would be like in Israel, the Arizal's mikvah. In France, you have Rashi's mikvah. Spring water means an underground spring. A spring water is not possible, at least very improbable, to be heated. It is whatever temperature it is, which is, I believe, is a steady 57 degrees all year round, which is not freezing, but it's cold.
But it's cold.
Yes, yes. And in order for a Zav to become Tohar, the only way he can do that is with Mayim Chayim, with spring water, not with the mikvos that we have. We've mentioned before, the mikvos that we have, which are heated, and the reason why they're heated is because we're dealing with rainwater that has been collected and then stored in a pit, as it is meant to be, and that water can be heated. In fact, the water that we actually immerse in is not even the rainwater, it's actually tap water in an adjacent pit, which is connected to the rainwater through a tube. And that's the mikveh that we immerse in, which is fine for our purposes, as we'll learn when we get into the discussion of Nida and Zava, which is a woman. We'll discuss then more specifically the type of mikveh that we use, which is appropriate for what we need it for, but it will not work for a Zav. He needs Mayim Chayim. He needs to have spring water. So he has to count 7 clean days. Then he puts his clothing in a regular mikveh. He has to immerse in spring water. In Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, Uvayom Hashmini, on the 8th day, Yikach lo shtei sorim, he has to take 2 doves, O shnei b'nei yona, or 2 turtle doves, the 2 different sizes of birds, Uba lifnei Hashem, El Pesach o El Moed, he comes to Hashem, to the entrance of the Mishkan, or the Beis HaMikdash, Unisanam el HaKohen, he gives them to the Kohen. Ve'asa usam HaKohen, the Kohen will make those 2 birds, Echad Chatas veha Echad Ola. One will be a Chatas, a sin offering. One will be a burnt offering. V'chiper Ola v'Kohen lifnei Hashem mizovo. And the Kohen will atone for him in front of Hashem from his Zav, from having become a Zav. And he'll become Tohar in this process. As we mentioned last week, last time we met, that Ziva, Zav, a discharge of this sort, is something which is unhealthy. It's a sickly type of discharge. It implies that there is a physical sickness, just as Tsaras has a physical malady to it. The skin is diseased, but the Torah is describing the halachic implications of it. And for the halachic implications, that would happen with Zav, provided it fits the parameters that we mentioned, that he has 3 separate discharges on 3 days or less. If he has discharges at different times than that, he still is suffering from some physical malady, but he is not tamei in the way that the Torah describes. The Zav, who only has 1 discharge, is tamei only for 1 day. And the rule is going to be the same as we're about to have in the next paragraph. The next paragraph is going to be about Shechvas Zera. Shechvas Zera is seed, that if a man has a discharge of Shechvas Zera, then he's going to become Tamei for 1 day. And Zav, a discharge of Zav 1 time, is the same as Shechvas Zera. But once he has a discharge of Zav 2 times within 2 days, then he's already tamei for 7 days, and if it's 3 times within 3 days, he's tamei for 7 days, plus he has to bring a karban. It should be noted that the process of counting 7 clean days from the discharge of Zav is more complicated than it will be for a woman when we talk about Zava. And the reason is because the color of Ziva is either a clear or a whitish color, much more difficult to detect, so that whatever is going to be used to see if there is a discharge is going to be more difficult to tell whether it is or is not a discharge. It's much more difficult to see what it really is. So that is a complexity within the tumah of Zav. Now we move on, as I mentioned, to Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16, to the tumah of Shechvas Zera, which again is seed. I'm going to use the Hebrew Shechvas Zera. V'ish ki seitzei mimenu Shechvas Zera, a man that when Shechvas Zera comes out of him, when he has a discharge of Shechvas Zera, so he's tameh. V'rachatz b'mayim es kol b'saro, he has to wash his entire body in water, which means he has to immerse in a mikvah. Here he does not require mayim chayim, does not require spring water. A regular mikvah will do. V'tamei ad ha'arev, and he is tamei until evening. Now this is true anytime a man is intimate, because whenever he is intimate, then there's going to be a discharge of Shechvas Zera. And a man becomes tamei for the day after he is intimate. It would be true even if he was not intimate, but the normal way that would happen is through intimacy, and he becomes tameh. And that's a normal fact of life, that a man becomes tameh after being intimate with his wife. The tumah is a tumah that goes away after a day, but only if he goes to the mikvah. And he goes to a regular mikvah. And that is why men go to the mikvah before Yom Kippur. Men go to the mikvah before Yom Kippur for this tumah, for the tumah of Shechva Zera. There's no requirement for a man today to be tahar. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't eat truma. And therefore, a man can be tameh. And that's fine. However, before Yom Kippur, in order to have an extra level of purity, there is a minhag that men go to the mikvah. And this is the reason why men go to the mikvah before Yom Kippur. Going to the mikvah before Yom Kippur will not remove the tumah of coming in contact with a dead body. It will not remove the tumah of zav, because that requires spring water. The only tumah that it will remove for a man, a discharge type of tumah, would be this tumah of shichvas zera. And that's why men go to the mikvah before Yom Kippur. There was a time in the time of the Mishnayos and the Gemara where there was a rabbinic decree, this is rabbinic, that a man who is tamei shichvas zera is not allowed to study Torah. There was such a decree. What was the purpose of that decree? It was, the purpose was because if someone is going to be a serious Talmud Chacham, he's going to be a serious Torah scholar, a man who wants to really immerse himself in Torah cannot be a man who is involved very much in worldly pleasures. If he indulges in food a lot, that's incompatible with becoming a serious Torah scholar. Similarly, if he is regularly intimate with his wife, that also is incompatible with becoming a serious Torah scholar. Therefore, there was a decree that was enacted by the sages that a man who is tamei of this nature cannot study Torah. Now, all he has to do is go to the mikvah. If he goes to the mikvah, then he is allowed to study Torah, even though the day is not over. So it was not unusual that a man who was intimate with his wife would get up in the morning and before davening in the morning would go to the mikvah. Very common thing that would take place, which is described in the time of the Gemara. And that way they would be able to study Torah. But it just meant that there was something that was it was another thing that had to be done. It was, I don't want to call it a nuisance, but it means that there's something that has to be done in order to be able to study Torah. It was a process. Eventually, they rescinded that gezerah, that decree, because it was a decree that was counterproductive. Because for a while, it was very productive. It did what it was supposed to do. But eventually, it got to a point where people simply just didn't study Torah. So they rescinded.
We were all thinking the other direction.
Yeah.
Right. No. There were no more
but
kids.
But men didn't go to the mikveh the way women.
But you mean with the same type of preparation?
Right.
We'll talk about that when we get to the women with going to the mikveh. Yeah, but that's a good point. And they did have to make sure there was nothing on their bodies that would separate between them and the water, but not with the same degree that the women do. That's correct. So they rescinded the decree, and therefore today a man can study Torah even if he is tameh. However, there are those who still keep an element of that decree and are careful to go to the mikvah whenever they are intimate. And they do go to the mikvah following that. So there are men who do it. There are men who go to the mikvah regularly just because. They'll go to the mikvah every Friday or whatever it is. That you do find that amongst certain men, certainly amongst the Hasidim, you find it more than other places. But it is a practice that some people do. But as far as the Torah is concerned, a man can be tamei with shichva zera and go about his life, and it doesn't get in the way of anything, and it will be okay for him to study Torah and do whatever else he has to do, except for going into the Beis HaMikdash or eating truma, which both do not apply today. So today, the only time that a man that there's a accepted practice that all men go to the mikvah, that is before Yom Kippur. Some say before Rosh Hashanah as well, and that's a generally accepted practice. Now, the Torah continues, Pasuk Yud Zayin, V'chol beged v'chol or, ashiyelav shechva zera, any clothing or any leather that there is shechva zera on it, v'chubas b'mayim v'tamei ad ha'aref, it needs to be washed in water, which means it has to be immersed. It becomes tamei. The shechva zera comes in contact with clothing or a garment or leather or whatever it is, that becomes tamei, and it needs to be immersed in a mikvah to become tahar. Now, as we mentioned last time, it's okay if it stays tamei. You're allowed to have tamei things in your house. That's okay. But if you want it to be tahar, it has to go to the mikvah.
Does it need to be washed off first? So I'm contaminated.
Yeah, it has to be washed off first. Yeah, yeah. Yurches 18. V'isha asher yishgav ish osa shechvas zara. A woman that a man will be intimate with her. Both he and she become tamei, and they would need to go to the mikvah to become tahar. She becomes tamei as well through the intimacy because of the shechva zera. She becomes tamei as well. Now, it's important to note over here, the reason she becomes tamei is not because she was touching the shechva zera. That's not why. Because tumah is only contracted from the outside of the body, not from the inside of the body. If a person theoretically would take something tamei, let's say a tamei piece of meat or something like that, and swallow it, kosher, but tamei, and swallow it without touching it in any way, someone would take it and put it into his mouth and he would just swallow it, then the person, according to the Torah, would not become tamei. According to the Rabbanon, he does become tummy, but according to the Torah, he does not become tummy because that tumma is only touching the inside of the body, not the outside of the body. Therefore,
Putting it in the cup, we talked about.
Yeah, we talked about that. That's correct. We did talk about it. Yes, yes. So therefore, intimacy does not make a woman tummy because she is touching the shechva zera, that she's touching it, but it's because the Torah decrees over here that she becomes tummy. That is the reason. It's not because of touching it. It is because just the Torah decrees intimacy makes both him and her tummy. Again, it is a one-day tumma. If they would like to remove the tumma, they can go to any mikvah. It doesn't have to be spring water, right? Any mikvah will do the trick over here. And once they go to the mikvah, they are tahar. As with all tumos, the day they go to the mikvah, they have a status called a tevul yom, which means a person who went to the mikvah that day, which already reduces the tumah to a certain level, and then by nightfall they're completely tahar. If they choose to go to the mikvah,
and
but again,
if they don't.
They don't. Then they're tamei. That's all.
Like,
it's fine.
Forever.
Until they go to the mikvah. Until they go to the mikvah. Yeah. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with being tummy.
Good.
People can be tummy. That's it. Again, if a person wants to go to the Beis HaMikdash, they have to become tar. If a person wants to eat truma, they got to become tar. But if a person is just living their lives, they do not need to be tar.
We're all tummy.
We are all tummy. Yeah, most likely we are all tummy. From various types of tuma.
Okay.
From various types of tuma.
It's okay.
If you've ever been to a funeral, you become tummy.
Tell her it's okay.
From birth, we mean the birth itself. Baby itself is not tummy.
It's not tummy.
No, the mother becomes tummy, uh-huh. But
so
the baby
does
not
become tummy in the process.
No, not necessarily. It doesn't have to become tummy. Uh-huh. Right. Now those are the two discharges of a man. That's zav, which has the potential of being a very difficult tumah. Could become a 7-day tumah with a karban, with the requirement of mayim chayim, of spring water. And then there's shechva zera, which is a much more diminished tumah, which is a 1-day tumah, does not require a karban, does not require spring water to become tahar. Now we move on to the two tumas of discharges of a woman. These are tumas that come through discharges. So for a man, we had zav and shechva zera. For a woman, we have nida and zava. Those are going to be the two types of discharge tumos of a woman. Now, as I mentioned before, it's somewhat confusing because we have in our minds what is the normative practice today with the laws of family purity. But the laws of family purity are after the discussion here in the Torah, then you have the Mishnayos and the Gemara, and then you have all the rabbinic decrees, and therefore we have a normative practice. What we are studying is what the Torah says, which is going to be a not completely different, but a very different approach to what we're used to. And there's some complexity here, which the rabbinic decrees have eliminated some of the complexity, because it's even the playing field, as we'll see. So bear in mind that this may not look as familiar as you expect it to look. Now,
is it because you don't have a base on English or the
rest? No, because there are rabbinic decrees, that's why. Okay. As you'll see. Okay. You'll see. Now, the both Nida and Zava is the same discharge. It's blood. It's menstrual blood. However, I shouldn't say menstrual, it's uterine blood. That's really the correct term. Menstrual implies it has to do with the cycle. It's really uterine blood that's the issue. Now, that's true for both Nida and Zava. The difference between Nida and Zava is going to be when it happens. And I want to describe this to you because it is, again, it is not something that people realize because it's not, again, it's not normative practice. So I want to show you what we're talking about over here. We know there's a concept of counting 7 clean days. But the truth of the matter is, according to the Torah, a Nida does not count 7 clean days. Only a Zava counts 7 clean days. According to the Torah, the way it works is as follows, that a woman who has a discharge of Nida, of we'll call it uterine blood, which we assume is menstrual, so then she becomes Tamei. That we know. Now, here, in addition to the Tuma that we've been talking about until now, which is she's Tamei, perhaps what she sits on becomes Tamei, person she touches becomes Tamei, things like that, all the Tuma we've been talking about, there's also a prohibition to her husband, of being intimate with her husband. That's a separate issue that we will discuss as well. But she becomes Tamei when she becomes a Nida. Now, that when that happens, she becomes Tamei, we'll call that day one. When she becomes Tamei, she's Tamei for 7 days. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. She's Tamei for 7 days. At the end of 7 days, provided that the discharge has stopped, whenever it stopped, she goes to the mikvah and she's done. There's no counting of clean days. This is for Nida. There's no counting of clean days. So even if she bled for 6 days, or even for 7 days, as long as it stops, by the end of the 7th day, she goes to the mikvah and she's done. She's now permitted to her husband, and there are no tumah laws associated with her. Of course, there's no karban with Nida. Once these 7 days have passed, and she has successfully gone to the mikvah, now ensues an 11-day period of time. These 11 days are days where we expect that she does not have any discharges, because she finished with the discharges during those 7 days. During these 11 days, we expect her to not have any discharges. If she has a discharge during these 11 days, then it's Zava discharge. We don't look at it as Nida, which we'll call, they're both uterine blood, but we'll call the 7 days, we'll call that Nida, we'll call that menstrual. The 11 days is something else. It's uterine, but it's not the typical menstrual cycle. As you can tell, 11 days after those 7 days would be unusual for a woman to have a discharge during that time. If she does, the rule changes, and she has the rule of a Zava. What are the rules of Zava? So the rules of Zava are as follows. If she has a discharge for one day, doesn't matter how much of the time during the day, but it was just one day, let's say on the third day she has a discharge, let's say she has a discharge that day, then she would be tame for 24 hours. 24 hours. May ace lays, 24 hours. If the next day she has a discharge again, then she would be tame for an additional 24 hours, for a total of 48 hours. But if she has a discharge 3 days in a row during these 11 days, then she is a Zava Gidola, she's considered to be a true Zava, and now she'll have the same rule as the male Zav, which is, she would have to count 7 clean days, and after counting 7 clean days, she would go to the mikvah and bring a karbon, just like a Zav. And we'll learn that she's going to need Mayim Chayim, she's going to need spring water, in order to become completely tar. Just like a Zav, like the male version of the Zav. That's going to be the rule during these 11 days.
Is it the same carbon of the true dose?
Yeah, we'll see that in the Chodesh, yes.
Is it once the blood discharge? Or?
It's all blood. This is all uterine blood.
Oh, okay.
Once the 11 days are done, then whenever she next has a discharge, that will begin the 7 days of Nida. So for a woman who is healthy and the discharges are happening as one would expect them to happen, then this never happens, this 11-day thing. Because what happens is, whenever it is she gets her regular discharge, her regular period, and we give her 7 days where she's tameh, she goes to regular mikvah, not spring water, a regular mikvah, she finishes with that, no clean days, she's done after 7 days, and that's it. And then, for most women, they're going to go at least 11 days before it happens again. So whenever it happens again, we'll be back to these 7 days, and there's no issues. However, if it in an unusual manner, it's usually because something is happening, therefore she has some kind of a discharge during the first 11 days after the 7 days, then we're going to deal with the potential of needing 7 clean days. But it's only potential, because if she only saw one during the 11 days, there's no clean days. If she saw twice, there's no 7 clean days. But if she saw 3 times in a row, then it will require 7 clean days. It will require a spring water mikvah, and it will require a karbon at the end of that time. Yeah.
You had talked about 24 hours. So what if 2 or 3 of these occur within the same first 24
That doesn't
hours.
Matter. And that's a distinction between a Zav and a Zava. With a man, if he has 3 discharges, even if they're within 10 minutes, he's now a complete Zav. With a woman, it has to be on 3 separate days.
So after the first 24 hours, then?
Yeah, it's got to be 3 separate days for a woman. It cannot be on the same day. Whereas for a man, even on the same day, could make him into a complete Zav. That's right. Okay, so now we're going to see, there are more details, but we'll see it in the Chumash itself. Now, as I said, this is not normative practice today. Normative practice today is whenever a woman has a discharge, she counts 7 clean days. But that is due to a rabbinic decree, because we do not know how to distinguish necessarily between these two systems. And people can get mixed up, and it's not clear, and therefore we have a rabbinic decree that we always count 7 clean days no matter what. It's the Gemara says, actually it's not really, I wouldn't call it a rabbinic decree. The Gemara says that the women, the Benos Yisrael, the pious women of Israel, accept it upon themselves that if they even see a tiny discharge, they count 7 clean days. The Gemara says it was the wind, this was a grassroots decree. It has become normative halacha, but it came from the women. It did not come from the rabbis saying this is what has to happen. It was the women saying that we want to have this extra level of care, to be careful with this halacha, and therefore they count 7 clean days for even one discharge, and with irrespective of what day it happened. It goes all the way back to the Gemara. Goes back to the time of the Gemara. So the Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19, V'isha kisye zava, a woman who who will be a zava. Now, this word zava really means nida. The word zav or zava just means to flow. That's all it means. So here, this first paragraph, we're not talking about zava, we're talking about nida, which would be the regular uterine bleeding the woman would have. So v'isha kisia zava, when she'll be a, she'll have some sort of discharge. Dam yezova bivsara, blood will flow from her body. Shivas yamim tieve nidasa, she will be a nida for 7 days. It doesn't say 7 clean days, just 7 days. Anybody who touches her will become tamei until evening. We're going to have all the rules of tumah that we saw with zav. All that she lies down upon when she is anida will become tamei. Anything she sits upon will become tamei. This is the tumah of midras, which we described a few weeks ago when we learned about zav. Anybody who touches that which she lies down upon, he needs to put his clothing in the mikvah, and he also has to put himself in the mikvah, and he's tamei until evening. Anybody who touches any utensil that she sits upon, he shall immerse his clothing, and again he will also immerse himself, and will become tamei until evening. V'imala mishkav hu, and if he is on a mishkav means something which one lies down on, o ala kli, or on a utensil, asher hi yosheves alav binagavo, that she is sitting upon when he touches it, yitma arev, he'll become tamei until evening. So, these are the laws of tumah, very similar to the laws we had a few weeks ago with zav.
How did you deal with children? And as children get older, how do you explain to them, don't sit where I sat?
No, they become tummy, that's all.
And that...
It's fine.
Okay.
They're tummy. The way that we'd normally practice would be that people are presumed to be tummy until they go to the mikvah. So it's fine. So they're tummy. The only issue would be that if she has her husband or an adult child who wants to, let's say they're Kohanim, they're going to eat Truma, or they want to go to the Beis HaMikdash, then they need to be careful.
Okay.
But it was as we described last time, it was normal that people were aware of this, of Tumah and Tahara, and if a person needed it to make sure that they were Tahar, then this was something which people took care about. As we mentioned last time, this was not something that was kept private. It could not be kept private, because people had to know. If someone wanted to remain tar, they would have to know, are they able to sit on this couch? Could they not sit on this couch? Etc. So that was something which everybody would have to be aware of, and within the family, whatever the system the family would have, that's what they would do. Now, as I mentioned, there is another element over here, which is the prohibition for a husband and wife to be intimate when she is in nida. That's not strictly a tumah discussion. This prohibition will appear right over here, and we'll see it again later on in Parshios, Acharemos, and Kedoshim when we discuss all of the forbidden relationships. One of the forbidden relationships is the laws of family purity of nida, that a husband and wife may not be intimate when she is a nida. Here, the Torah does not bring it up regarding the prohibition. Here the Torah brings up regarding the tumah. What is the status of the man if he should be intimate with her when he's not supposed to, when she's a nida? The fact that it's prohibited, that'll be discussed later. What's the punishment? We'll discuss that later. That's not what's being discussed over here. What we're discussing over here is, what is his tumah status? So the Torah says, "V'im shachov yishkav ish osa." If a man will be intimate with her, u'sihi nidasa alav, when she's a nida, and now it's upon him, v'tamei shivas yamim, he becomes tamei for 7 days. He contracts the same tumah as a nida. V'chol hamishkav asher yishkav alav yitma, anything which he lays down upon will also become tamei. He picks up that level of tumah of nida. And in fact, what's interesting here is, let's say for her, she's on day 5 of her nida. Remember, there's no clean days with nida. So whatever it does, it doesn't matter how many days she bled, it's irrelevant. She started two, whatever it is, either she's still bleeding, she's not still bleeding, it's irrelevant. It's now day five. He's not supposed to be intimate with her until after day seven. He does it anyway. He becomes tameh. He becomes tameh for 7 days. So even though she only has 2 more days left for her tumah, he has to be tameh for the next 7 days because he picks up the same tumah of nida. He doesn't start from day five. He starts from day one, and he's tameh for 7 days. Now again, we're not dealing here with the prohibition. We're dealing here with the tumah implication of a husband and wife being intimate when they're not supposed to be. Now that's all nida. That means that it's the typical, again, uterine bleeding, the menstrual cycle of a woman, and that these are the laws that we just learned. Now the next paragraph is, what about zava? What about if it happens during the 11 days that really nothing should be happening? V'isha kiyazuv zov dama yamim rabim, a woman who will have a flow of blood for many days. Many days means 3 days. Below es nidasa, and it's not the time that she's supposed to be a nida. It's the wrong time. Ochi sazuv al nidasa, or she shall have a flow in addition to her being a nida, which means it goes past the 7 days. So then, kol yemei zov tumasa, all the days that she has the tuma of ziva, of zav, kimei nidasa tiyeh, she'll have the same laws as the days when she's a nida. Tameahi, she is tame. So all the laws of tuma will apply, which we'll now enumerate. Kol amishkava shetishkava lav kol yemei zova, all of the things that are normally laid down upon, that she lies down upon, all the days that she is a zav, kimishkav nidasa yela, will have the same rules as that which she laid down upon when she was a nida. V'cholakliya shetesheva lav, and all the utensils that she sits upon, tame yia, will be tame ketumas nidasa, like when she's tame as a nida. V'chol anokeya bam yitma, anybody who touches them will become tame. V'chibes begadav, they will immerse their clothing. V'rachatz bamayim, and they themselves will go to the mikvah. V'tame ad ha'arev, and be tame until evening. Now, how does she become tahora? Vim tahara mizova, and should she become tar from her flow of blood, which means she stops bleeding? V'safra la shivas yamim, now she has to count 7 clean days, v'achar titar, and then she'll become tahar. Uvayom, she has to go to the mikvah, of course. Uvayom ha-shmini, on the 8th day, tikach la shtei sorim, she will take for herself 2 birds, 2 turtle doves, thank you. Oshne b'nei yona, or 2 doves.
Young doves, okay.
Ve'vio sama la kohen, she'll bring them to the kohen, al pesach v'amoy, to the entrance of the tent of meeting. Ve'asa kohen esarechad chatas, the kohen will make 1 into a sin offering. Ve'esarechad ola, and the other one will be a burnt offering. V'chiper aleha ha-kohen lifnei Hashem, and the kohen will atone for her before Hashem. Mizov tumasa, from the ziva of tumah. As we had with Zav, and as we had with Saras, a woman who becomes a Zava because she has uterine bleeding at this time, that indicates a physical malady as well. We're talking about something which shouldn't be happening. In a regular, healthy person, it shouldn't be happening. So if it's happening, it does indicate something else that's going on. The Torah is not dealing with the health aspect of it. The Torah is dealing with the tuma aspect of it. Even if it doesn't make her tame, let's say she bled on day 3 and 4, and then skipped day 5, and bled on day 6 and 7. Well, then she's not a Zava Gedola. But there's still something going on. There's still a health issue. She has to see a doctor. Something's happening. But in terms of tuma, it would have to be 3 days in a row for her to become a Zava Gedola that would require clean days and all of the carbon and everything else that we described in the Torah over here. So, to sum it up, we have these discharges for men, for women. They make a person tame. The tumah that we're talking about is not, it's not a bad thing to be tame. A person can be tame. Most of us are tame, if not all of us. And that's perfectly fine. However, if a person wants to do something that requires tahara, that would be a karban or truma or something like that, then one would have to be cognizant of these things and become tahar. As we mentioned, the system in the days of Tumah and Tahara was much more open about these things because people had to know. In addition to the fact that people had to know, people owned less things. We have in our closets multiple sets of clothing. In their day, they didn't have multiple sets of clothing. Everybody had a few sets of clothing, but certainly not the abundance, thank God, that we have today. Therefore, it was common practice for a woman to have sets of clothing, one or two, that she would wear when she was tahar, and sets of clothing that she would designate for when she was tameh, when she was a nida. That would be common practice for a woman, that she would have different sets of clothing. Some she would designate for when she was tameh, some she would designate for when she was tahar. Tumah is a fact of life. People become tameh all the time. Except that for a woman, it's more predictable because it's a cycle. So therefore, for a woman, she would have different sets of clothing that she would wear when she was tameh, when she was tahar. Men also become tameh, but it's less predictable. It doesn't work that way. It's not the same type of predictable cycle. So therefore, if they didn't have that same sort of thing, and also men's clothing tends to be more bland than women's clothing. Men tend to wear the same types of things over and over again. So it's less distinguishable with a man. But with a woman, that was common practice that they would do so. Bear in mind that before, when Tumah and Tahara was relevant, it didn't only apply to a married woman. Today's day and age, we know that women are taught about the laws of family purity when they're ready to get married. That's when they get taught, because it's not relevant before then. But in the days of Tumah and Tahara, it mattered even for a young woman. It didn't matter whether she was getting married or not. She can become tameh like anybody else can become tameh, and it was relevant, and she had to know the rules and how to deal with it. So it was therefore common practice to be aware of these things even from a young age. In addition, even when a husband was not home, he was away or out of town or on a business trip, whatever it is, a woman would still go to the mikvah, where today women don't go to the mikvah if their husband is not home, because why bother? What's the point? But because today the only relevance of going to the mikvah is to make a woman permitted to her husband for intimacy. But before then, what would be the reason? Without that, there's no reason. But in the days of Tumah and Tahara, it mattered even if her husband was away. This is why, for those of you who have attended the Wednesday night shiur, when we learned about David and Bathsheba, when we learned about that whole story, and Bathsheba's husband, Uriah HaChiti, was away at war, she went to the mikvah. Why did she go to the mikvah? Her husband wasn't home. But she went to the mikvah because in their day, it didn't matter whether the husband was home or not. It mattered for Tumah and Tahara, and she needed to be tahar, so she went to the mikvah. It happens to be that also made her permitted for intimacy. But that wasn't why she went to the mikvah. She went to the mikvah because of the laws of Tumah and Tahara. Today, women primarily go to the mikvah because of the laws of family purity. There are some women who do have a minhag to go to the mikvah Erev Yom Kippur. There is such a thing, but it's rarely practiced. And it's a little bit complicated to make it work out, because certainly the men's mikvah the women can't attend. Women wouldn't want to, trust me. And the women's mikvah is not usually open for business during the day. But there are communities where the women's mikvah is opened up on Erev Yom Kippur for women to go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. I don't believe that's the practice here.
I actually right. 1 year did have someone call.
And yeah, really? Okay. So there is such a minhag that some people have, but it's rare. Most of the time, women only go to the mikvah when it has to do with becoming permitted to their husbands. The Torah ends off over here. V'yizhar temes b'nei Yisrael mitumasam. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31. V'yizhar temes b'nei Yisrael mitumasam. You shall warn the Jewish people about their tumah. Okay, it says here, you shall separate. You know what? I'm sorry. That's accurate. My translation was wrong. It's not warn. It's missing a hey. They would have an extra hey there for meant to warn. You shall separate the Jewish people from their tumah, because the Jewish people are involved with karbanos, with truma. They have to be careful not to become tameh when they're involved with the Beis HaMikdash. They will not die because of their tumah. When they make the mishkan that is among them tamei, the problem of being tamei is when they're involved with the mishkan. Zos toras hazav. This is the law of the zav. That's a male. Va'asher teitzei menu shikva zera. And a man that will have shikva zera come out of him, the tamava, to become tamei. With that, that verse is talking about a man. Ve'adava b'nidasa, and a woman who is dava with her nida, which I think means what does it mean over there?
Suffers.
Okay, suffers through her the nida. Nida could mean the word literally means separation. Ve'azav es zovo, and someone who becomes a zav la zachar v'la nekeva, for male and for female. U'l'isha she'ishkavim t'meya, and a man who is intimate with a woman who is tamei that he's not supposed to be intimate with. What are the laws of the tumah? All of this has been described in the verses that we just read. Yes?
What happens if the tabernacle does get contaminated?
Yeah, depending on the parts that became tamei, they can be put in the mikvah. Some parts cannot become tamei, some parts can, and those things can be put in the mikvah. Yeah. Now, we just read yesterday Parshas Para. Parshas Para Aduma is the extra Torah reading that we have on the Shabbos before the reading of Chodesh. Next week we read Chodesh, this coming Shabbos. Chodesh is read on the Shabbos of or preceding Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Para is read the Shabbos before Chodesh. It's usually the Shabbos after Purim, but not always. Sometimes it is, there's a break. Sometimes it's the second Shabbos after Purim. The Parashas Para is about the tumah of mace, of coming in contact with a dead body, and how to remove that tumah through the ashes of the Para Aduma, of the red heifer, and the mikvah. That's what it's about. Those of you who paid attention yesterday, that's what's right over there. We know that of the four special readings that we have at this time of year, before Purim and before Chanukah, before Purim and before Pesach, we have Shkolim, which is the Shabbos either on or prior to Rosh Chodesh Adar. That tells us about the half shekel. We have Zachar, the Shabbos before Purim, which reminds us about the destruction of Amalek. Then we have Para, and then we have Chodesh. Those are the four. Of those four, we know that Zachar is a Torah commandment. Zachar, to hear the words of Zachar, or at least to read it oneself, is a Torah commandment that one must do. So we know that normally Torah reading in Shul is not a Torah commandment. Every week that we read the Torah, whatever parasha of the week it is not a Torah commandment. That is a rabbinic law. But we know that Zachar is a Torah commandment that has to be read. Para, which was what we read yesterday, most authorities hold that it is not a Torah commandment, but there are those who say that it is, that para is a Torah commandment. It's unclear what's the source for that commandment. Where would we find the source that the Jewish people should be told about becoming tahor from the tumah of mace, of becoming contact with the dead body, or any tumah for that matter? The Rav Yaakov Kanievsky, the Stipler Gaon, who passed away in the 80s, the 1980s, in his commentary to Chumash, he writes that the source that he believes for those who say that para is a Torah law is right here. Is from Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31, V'yizartemes b'nei Yisrael mitumasan, you shall separate the Jewish people from their tumah. We know that you're allowed to be tamei. There's nothing wrong with being tamei. So when are we required to separate the Jewish people from their tumah? were required to separate the Jewish people from their tumah when the nation needs to be tahor. When does the nation need to be tahor? That would be for Pesach. Because since everybody has to bring a korban Pesach, therefore everybody has to be tahor. Now it's impossible for everybody to be tahor. If somebody passed away, someone has to bury them. So that means people are going to be tameh. But as much as possible, people have to try to become tahor before Pesach. Therefore, we read Parashas Parah at this time of year to bring up in people's minds the importance of becoming tahor. And it takes some planning. Sometimes you can't help it. You become tameh, you just can't help it. But sometimes a person could plan ahead to avoid tumah. And therefore, now would be the time, with all the shopping lists for Pesach and all the cleaning for Pesach and everything going on, also to keep in mind, we have to try to keep ourselves tahor as we get closer to Pesach. And therefore, we read Parshas Parah. Today, it's not relevant, because we don't have a Karban Pesach, unfortunately. But there will come a time, please God, speedily in our days, where it will be relevant, and then we're going to need to keep in mind to remain tahor before Pesach. Now, Parshas Parah is talking about the tumah of a dead body, but it would apply to all tumas as well, to the tumah of Zav, Zava, Nida, all the ones that we read just now would apply for the tumah as well. The only time in history that all of the Jewish people were tahor was Matan Torah, when we got the Torah. When we got the Torah, there, the men and women separated from each other. That avoided the tumah of intimacy, of Shechvah Zera. And everybody was tahor. Nobody died. Everybody was tahor for the giving of the Torah. But that is an exception to the rule. Most of the time, people are tameh. That's just the way it goes. And there's always going to be a segment of the population who are tameh.
So that's why we have the Pesach Sheni?
Yes, that's the reason for the Pesach Sheni, right. Because since there's always going to be some people who are tameh, the Pesach Sheni is going to account for that.
Oh, okay.
Right, right.
Do you know why, or maybe you mentioned it, ask Estella, I'll call it, why they bring a sin and an elevation.
Right. So it seems that just as with Tzara'as, we know that Tzara'as comes because of a sin, even though it's a physical malady also, but apparently there's a sin involved that we presume there's some type of a sin. When a man becomes a Zav or a woman becomes a Zava, which is unusual, which is also a physical malady, the Torah seems to presume some element of sin in order for that to happen. We don't judge people. It could be for any number of reasons, but the default is that there is some sort of a sin involved. Okay. So, Mirz Hashem, next week we will begin Parshas Acharevos.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.